This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
All the way from the A, you listen to my favorite lesbian on BRQ.
Hey, stay locked in with your favorite lesbian on Black Radical Queer. Yo.
Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole, aka your favorite lesbian, and you're listening to Black Radical Queer Podcast, our stories on our own terms. Before diving into this episode, I want to take a moment to tell y'all about Black Radical Queer on Patreon. Patreon is a great way to support the podcast because those contributions help to offset the cost of making this thing happen. So production costs, editing costs, hosting fees, all of the funds from the Patreon go towards supporting that and keeping this podcast moving right on along. Also, there's perks to becoming a patron because you get early access to the episodes and you also get a discount on all BRQ merch. So it's a great way to support. I appreciate my current patrons. And if you want to become a patron, you can do so by going to patreon.com. So Patreon is patreon.com/blackradqueer. BLKRADQWR. Thank you so much for listening. And let's get into this episode. Hey, y'all. This is Javia Nicole. Welcome to another episode of Black Radical Queer Podcast. This episode is part of a series that I'm doing called Click by BRQ. Click is QLIC. It stands for Queer Love in Color. And in this series, I really want to specifically focus on queer love and relationships, all different types of relationship dynamics and configurations, as well as the representation of queer love in media and the intersection between social justice and queer love. So that's what this series is all about. Today, as usual, I'm going to allow my guests to introduce themselves and make sure you let me know what pronouns are appropriate to use for you. And then once they get a chance to introduce themselves, then we will get into our conversation.
Okay. Hey, y'all. My name is Jaleesa. I am I'm a mom, so I'm a mom to some beautiful Black boys. I actually have a partner of 3 years. I've been previously married, and I do a lot of work in the community regarding basically active work. So I am a yoga instructor. I am a cyclist. So I do a lot of mental balancing is what I like to call it, in the community, between moms, between neighbors, between friends and family, work in advocacy to kind of build the mental state of a lot of things that we have lacking at the moment.
All right. For those who listen to the show, and Jaleesa has listened to the show, but you already know that any type of kind of like advocacy work is near and dear to my heart. That is my basically my baby, my background, just coming up in like a lot of grassroots organizing and social justice work. So I think that honestly, in particular, yes, Black people, but also like specifically Black queer folks, Black trans folks, we tend to do a lot of advocacy work, whether it's formally or informally, just as we navigate through our lives, we ultimately end up becoming, honestly, some type of advocate in some way, just right, based on our existence and how we have to navigate through this world. So it's always interesting, not surprising, but always interesting to me when Black folks are like, yeah, I do like advocacy stuff or community work, because that's what we do.
The organizing.
It comes with the territory of our existence. So, okay, I'm glad to have Jaleesa on. I think we met in a Facebook group. I think that's my first memory, but I could be wrong.
That's my first memory. My first memory is a Facebook group.
But it's been a while, and I'm pretty sure it was probably like a poly or a non-monogamous group or something. But honestly, I'm sure it's been years, and I just don't remember the year. But we do tend to kind of like navigate some of the same online spaces and stuff like that. And I unfortunately did not get to mutually surprise me leaving Atlanta, because that would have been cool. But, you know, now I'm out here in LA. But today, what I want to talk about is first kind of get an idea of how you identify and kind of like what your love style is, what kind of your relationship style is and stuff like that, and how you got to that point. So, you know, how did you kind of come to the place that you are now with your identity and kind of like your relationship style and what you want out of romantic relationships and just kind of community in general, not just romantic, but your right. love. Cause I don't only include, for me personally, I don't only include like romantic in my love style or whatever. I include platonic as well, but just kind of what that looks like for you.
Right. So what that looks like for me is like, I have a very interesting history there. A lack of queer representation in my lifestyle. I am a PK, I'm a preacher's kid. So, you know, that definitely led to a lack of queer identity growing up. But, you know, I still remember my first crush at 7 years old, you know, the brat was, that was, she ain't know it yet, but she still don't know it, but that was bae. But that was like at 7, and so I didn't have any, like, real images growing up. It wasn't until I was 16 and went to college and was like, you know, I'm a little gay. Let me start tapping into this and seeing.
Did you just like figure it out for yourself that, or, you know, like how did you come to that realization?
It was very obvious for me, because it was like, you have the, and now as I think I get older, and I've gotten older and I've kind of started noticing the patterns like back then, I think back and I'm like, you know, the men I dated tended to be a little like on the softer end, I guess is the word that I'm looking for. Like they had a lot of like feminine presenting qualities, if you would call it that. So like now that I look back on it and I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that, that was obvious, but it took 10 years of marriage and a divorce for me to actually become comfortable with it. And after I decided I wanted a divorce, because we were already in non-monogamous space, and we were in most of our marriage, we were non-monogamous. Mm-hmm. It's still something that I identify as polyamorous, but it's not something that I practice because it's exhausting, if I'm being completely honest. I'm tired and it wore me down. And I was like, you know what? I don't have that much energy to give to people. So what I've learned about myself and the polyamorous aspect of life is that polyamory is just, it's loving multiple people. So it's just polyamory. It's, you know, I love multiple people. I love my grandma, for God's sakes, you know, like it's having a different type of love. So I have my partner who is my rock, who is wonderful, who I am monogamous with. But I don't really classify certain people as friends. Like I would classify as, you know, them, I have an emotional attachment to them stronger than I would say is a typical friendship. Mm-hmm. So I have a few friends like that. And, those are the ones that, you know, if I had to say I was, you know, polysaturated, they would be in my polycule. Mm-hmm. But overall, I only have one partner who I am monogamous with. But I still consider myself polyamorous. But I never had any of those examples growing up. It was like, oh, okay, you get to this age and you're just like, figure it out on your own.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly, I was doing another, like, you know, recording for the series. And I was, prior to me doing the series, I did a poll across my social media. I did it on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, asking, you know, hey, for Black and brown queer folks, do you remember seeing any like queer romantic relationships of color growing up? Did you have any examples, whether it be in your life, like in real life, or in media, like seeing it on TV, seeing in movies, whatever? Do you remember any of that? And about maybe like 97% of people said no.
I have no recollection of that at all.
None. And so it's like, I just found it really interesting because as I was looking at this whole idea of possibility models, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and this was actually on a much older podcast episode. This was like early on in the podcast. And he asked me, he was like, you know, do you remember like basically seeing examples of kind of what you could potentially have in a relationship? Like you already knew that, like for me early on, I knew I want to be, like, I saw my future with, well, at the time, a girl, because I was young, but a woman. I saw like having a future with a woman as my life partner and that kind of thing, even though I didn't fully understand how that would really look because I didn't really have examples of that. I just knew how I felt. I knew what I felt in my heart, and I didn't envision that for myself with a man. In my little dreams and all that type of stuff, I never saw myself spending my life with a man in that way. So it's just interesting to me that most people didn't have that, not even just in media, but also just in their lives. You know, if people, and they may have seen people in their families who were queer or who had like same-sex partnerships and stuff like that, but they may not have been out, you know, or they may have been like, oh, that's, you know, a friend or something like that, but not, you know, acknowledged in the same way that husbands and wives were, or boyfriends and girlfriends right. were and stuff like that. So right. I just think that is really interesting. And then too, with the polyamorous piece, that adds a whole other layer to it. And I'm also someone who I say that polyamory is my love style, not necessarily my relationship style. But it has always been how I love. That's always been, I've always had the capacity to love multiple people and have like a deep emotional connection with multiple people, regardless of what our actual relationship looks like. But in terms of my relationship style is more relationship anarchy type of situation. Mm-hmm. So I definitely understand kind of how polyamory can be exhausting.
That's an understatement, because it definitely wore me down.
It's a lot. And then being able to, honestly, I really feel like I'm, I guess, more ambiamorous. Like I feel like I can be, my relationship style can be monogamous, but my love style is still going to be polyamorous regardless. Right. So I am nested with one person. I have a wife. I have S types because I have like DS, MS dynamics or whatever. But in terms of, even if nobody, like even when it was just me and my wife, because for a while it was, and that was very deliberate because she's monogamous mostly.
mine is monogamous.
But for a big chunk of our relationship, it was like just us two deliberately, but I didn't stop being poly just because, you know, my relationship was monogamous. So I definitely understand. Right.
It's very much a queer, you know, you get into a relationship, it doesn't stop you from being queer. I mean, mm-hmm. you're going to be queer point blank period. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely my love style. I think it took me to go, I went through a major tragedy in 2016. Mm-hmm. I lost my baby sister in a car accident, and that was very traumatic. And that was also, you know, a couple of months before I filed for divorce, or mm-hmm. before I decided I wanted a divorce. Mm-hmm. And I think it took, and I hate that, but I really think it took a major tragedy to like bring me down to the level of, okay, you know, is this what you like for real want, you know? So I actually started going to a therapist after, I mean, I'd always kind of dabbled in therapy. Always, you know, you have the therapist over here and the therapist over here. But
I love this idea of dabbling in therapy.
Dabbled you know, in therapy.
Like a little foot in,
you know, tip your foot in and pull it back out, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, I really started going to see a therapist regularly after that, because it was very traumatic. My sister was 20 years old when we lost her. And yeah, she was getting ready. She was actually getting ready to get married. She was supposed to be married that Friday. And it just shook me, because it was like, there was so much about life and love that I feel like she missed out on that I didn't miss out on. And one of the things she told me was before, this is the last time that I saw her, was we went out to dinner, and she was like, I need you to keep winning. I need you to keep winning, because you always win. And that was something, because I've always been kind of like the black sheep of the family per se. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with that. But like, it was after her death that made me realize, like, okay, you know, you're definitely the black sheep of the family, and you need to start leaning into that, and you need to stop limiting yourself. So I stopped, and I really started doing a lot of soul searching. And I literally, I think, went to one of my therapists, and I was like, you know, I think I might be gayer than I have thought I was.
Like, there's a spectrum, right? I might be a little further along the spectrum than I thought.
That's definitely what it was. I had already started dating my partner at the time, and we were slowly dating at the time, because she knew I was polyamorous and she's very monogamous. And then after, you know, I finally came to the decision and worked with my therapist and was like, okay, yeah, I'm a lot gayer than I really expected. So I need to kind of like present what my, you know, you, and that's the thing, the lack of having those role models and the lack of seeing that, you really have to build your life and what you want out of your relationship from the ground up, because you don't have that.
You don't have any kind of blueprints.
Yeah. Right. So it's like, I really started kind of going through this motion, going through these motions, and I'm still learning, very much so. I'm definitely not, you know, we've been together for 3 years, but I'm definitely, it's definitely a lot that I had to take on, because literally when we first started dating and said, okay, we're going to get serious, my first thing was, okay, we need to go to therapy, like, now, because I don't know what I'm doing. And that's the truth of it, is I genuinely did not know what I was doing. And it was like, okay, you have to watch your life build from what was presented to you, because something was presented to me, and I did live a, not monogamous, but I did live a heteronormative lifestyle in comparison to what I live now. And what I live now is an absolutely gay lifestyle, and it's a big jump, and it's very interesting, because I've actually spoken about, like, the difference. There's a huge difference, and I think I really did have to learn that, because it was weird at first.
I mean, it is it's a transition and an adjustment, because too, we have to factor in, like, the ways that we're socialized based on gender and stuff like that, and that impacts the relationship dynamics. And so, I mean, I've never been married to a man, but I've been with a man before. And the way that we interact with each other, the way we relate to each other, is so different than being with a woman. It's just so different. And even from that experience, even though I'm like, okay, the guys that I dealt with in the past, I mean, I liked them or whatever. And I mean, a couple of them, I loved them. I was very much, you know, I'm loved and was in love with them, but it just, there was something on a relational level that just didn't quite click for me, regardless of how strong my emotions were for them or anything like that. And it's this unspoken thing that I can't really articulate, but I know that when I've been with women, I haven't felt that. I haven't felt that little thing missing or this thing being off. And so it is an adjustment, like going from being in, well, like I shifted from being in like a long-term relationship with a guy to being like, okay, like, can I really do this for real, like, longer? And having to come to the realization that even though I love him very much and I was in love with him at the time, I just was like, at the end of the day, when I look at what other things I want in my life, do I see that happening with him? Like, with him specifically, or with him in general? And then if not, then, like, what does that look like for me? And versus, like, fast forwarding and having other relationships or whatever, then finally getting with my wife and seeing that in that person, like, being like, oh yeah, this is the person, you know, who I want to have those things with. So it's a transition for sure. Especially as you were navigating going through a divorce and having another partnership and, you know, all that stuff happening at the same time, and parenting,
parenting in the midst of it all, ballpark.
You know?
That's
so it's like, ballpark. How did you even make sense of all that or navigate that? Because throughout, you know, this whole time, you're still parenting, you're still, you know, you still have that dynamic going on, you know? So I guess, like, shifting into maybe like a co-parenting type of dynamic or something, or just, it just, that's a lot at one time.
It is. It's a whole lot at one time. I was definitely, you know, still parenting, going through the process of divorce. That I actually had another relationship at the time. I had just started dating my current partner. I had another relationship with another woman at the time, and then I was going through divorce. I had just lost my sister. And I really felt, because I think I was like 28, 29. And I really felt like I was going through like a major shift. I believe that your life, almost like a numbers game, your life gives you, you live your life in a cycle. And I felt like I had reached the end of my cycle. So it's time for a new cycle. And there was a lot of juggling, to say the least, and really discovering who I was. I think that's why, like I said, I dove into therapy, because one of my big things was, I mean, even just deciding the small things that most people consider as the next step in a relationship, I had to really like think about it and see if it's something that I wanted to do. Because after my divorce, I had never lived by myself. And of course I'll never live by myself. I have two boys that are not. Yeah.
I can hear them.
Can you? I'm sorry. But yeah, they're like, those are my babies. I love them, but I never lived by myself beforehand. So like, I was super excited when I was getting a divorce. I was like, what? He's gonna move out and I'm gonna have the house to myself every other weekend. Shut up. Like,
it's a different chapter. Yeah.
I was ready. I was so ready. And then like my partner and I had been dating for like a year, and she was like, okay, so what are the next steps? And I'm like, next steps? Like what? What are we doing? Cause in my head I was like, you know what? If anything, I was going to just date everybody and be poly and live by myself. Like, I was
gonna
ready.
Do a solo poly thing.
Bruh, I was so ready. But then like I brought it to my therapist, and my therapist is very, I love her. She's absolutely amazing. Black queer also.
Shout out to therapists. Okay. Therapy is the way, the truth, and the light. I've been trying to tell people.
it's a whole toolbox. Like that's a whole toolbox right there. And I have an amazing therapist. So shout out to my therapist, who is also Black and queer and very, she mean sometimes, but she but she gets the job done. Like she legitimately gets the job done. And I brought it to her, and I was like, you know, she wants me to move in, and I was in panic, because I was like, I had already planned out the next phase of my life where I wasn't going to be living with anybody. And I, you know, she actually brought that to me. She was like, you know, do you have any idea what you want this queer relationship to look like? And I was like, no. No. I mean, I'm enjoying it for right now, but no, I don't have any ideas. But it was like, okay, yo, like, okay, like y'all are serious. It's time to start thinking about what the next steps are. And so, you know, she gave me homework and made me work and be like, okay, what are the things that you could do without, you know, what are the things are you willing to compromise on? What is it going to take for you to be okay with moving in with somebody? So it was like, it was definitely, I had a lot of guidance throughout this chapter. And it wasn't, and like, I wish I had like the representation, because then I don't feel like I would have needed as much guidance and especially the Black representation. Cause you know, everybody watched Will and Grace, but you know,
right.
But nobody was really, there was nobody, there was no show like that, that was Black and revolutionary like that on TV. Not, not when we were young. I mean, so it's, I appreciate having the guidance that I had, but I don't feel like it should have been as necessary. I feel like,
I mean, that's part of the benefit of, I mean, because sometimes people, I think, try to minimize the importance of representation, but part of the importance of it is having something to look to. Of course, no one is like, I'm going to live my life exactly like TV. Like, it's not like that. But to even see that these things, for one, happen, and that there are possibilities, and that, you know, it's, you're not the only one, because nothing is new, you know, but it's good to actually see that nothing is new. We can say that, you know, but to physically see it, you know, to be able to like have some type of reference point, I think makes a huge difference. So you don't feel like you're having to always create the thing. And that's one of the big things I've encountered just over the course of my life in general, is
feeling like I always had to build it. I always got to build it. You know, I'm right. like, and sometimes, and it gets very tiring. And that's why I say that a lot of times we end up being advocates and organizers and all kind of stuff inherently because we have to build the thing and right. it gets tiring. And I just got to a point where I'm like, I am fucking exhausted. I'm tired of always having to create. Why can't there be something that is already present that I can kind of like use as a guide, or I can kind of step into or yeah. something. So it definitely gets frustrating having to navigate that. And I think the other thing too is, you know, you mentioned like your sister's accident. Sometimes it does take something that's a crisis to really like shift. For one, it does make us very cognizant of our own mortality and kind right. of like not putting things off and stuff like that. Like, hey, let me live now. Like, don't mm-hmm. let me not put this thing off till later. But also just kind of, it puts us in a very introspective place. And we start looking at, okay, let me evaluate kind of where I've come from, where I am now. Am I happy in this place? What do I need to do? And like, definitely I've had that it happen like throughout my life, but definitely with like my grandmother passing, I was like, I did kind of like, not a complete overhaul, but I definitely was like looking at every aspect of my life. Like, okay, am I yeah. really, you know, feeling this or, you know, whatever. So we have to kind of go through that process while still living our lives, you know. So you're doing this work on yourself and you're doing the homework and the therapy and all that kind of stuff while also still navigating these things in real time. You know, it's not like you get to take a break and just go off to therapy right. and work right. on it and then come back and like, all right, I'm better. Like I can come and I'm better equipped yeah. to handle this. It's like, no, I got to like apply this in real time immediately as I'm going through it.
Yeah. That was definitely the painful part of it is, and having things shift, like one of my sons had told me once, and this is after we'd moved in with my partner, and they already were very open. I mean, I'm very open and upfront with my kids. And one of the things that they said that really shook me was, you know, we've never known any other kids who have, you know, two moms or two dads. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, like it shook me.
Cause they're definitely out there.
I mean, that our neighbors. So I was just like, oh my God, like, yeah, like we, like that representation, you guys haven't seen that. You don't know what that looks like. And mm-hmm. now it makes me happy because I get to give that to them because mm-hmm. now my kids are very open with their friends and they're very, it's very funny because like there is a little girl over here, this was like probably right before COVID went rampant. There's a little girl over here and my partner answered the door and she called and this is the first time she had met my partner. And, my son goes, or no, I overheard their conversation. I was in the bedroom and the little girl goes, who was that? And my son was like, oh, that's like one of my assistant moms. And I just died.
Not one of my assistant moms. Hold on. One of my assistant moms. First of all, you're like one of them. So there's multiple. So how many assistant moms you got, son?
My ex-husband is also, he's married. So, so he's like, oh, that's just one of my assistant moms. So I have a mom, a dad, and two assistant moms. And I just died okay. laughing.
That's so funny. I've heard bonus moms and all kinds, but assistant moms, okay. He said this is a business and they are assistants.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. That is funny. But it's so interesting to me too, because kids are so brilliant and they have their own ways of kind of like processing through things and kind of making sense of it and organizing and all that. So it's so interesting just that was the choice, the word choice.
He said, he said assistant mom and I died. He did. He has said multiple times that he has three moms or whatever. And I'm not one to limit my child from love. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just my own personal rule is like, I'm never going to limit him from being loved by anybody. Mm-hmm. And like, it's very interesting to watch the shift and, you know, they're my babies are older. My youngest will be 9 coming up next month. So, and my oldest is 10. So they are definitely in that point of their life where they're asking questions and they're wanting to know stories. And it's actually very, it's nice to be able to put that image up there because mm-hmm. I didn't have that image as a kid. And you know, I don't know what my kids are going to do. I mean, I don't know what their life is going to become, but I feel accomplished that I've been able to present this different type of non-normal, I guess, non-norm
or
lifestyle.
Maybe a different normal?
Yeah, different normal. Like, I mean, just like a, not the typical that they would see. So that actually, it actually makes me happy that I am able to do that. But it's definitely still something that I'm learning. I'm not anywhere near a pro at this. I'm still my partner and I bought new mountain bikes yesterday. We're cyclists and we bought new mountain bikes yesterday and they're matching mountain bikes. And she looked at the picture and was like, you know, it's really gay that we have matching mountain bikes. I was like, I know.
That's true. I was like, hey, we may have reached a new level of gayness. Like you level up in a game or something. Like, okay, now we were on level 16. Now we're on level 17 with the bikes.
Yeah, it's too much now. Like, but you know, it's nice. And I think that I will say that has probably been the biggest thing that I will say that I love about having a partner who is a woman is we do a lot of the same stuff. Like our it's more like we're really good friends who happen to sleep with each other. So like, that type. And I love having that. And it's really interesting to know that's what I've been striving for and never really got.
Right.
So, I didn't have it as an image.
It's interesting to me because I wonder, like, as you're going through all these transitions, because that's a lot of transitions in a short time frame, from transitioning due to the loss of your sister, transitioning out of a marriage, transitioning in another relationship, all that stuff happening at the same time. How did you, like, what did you all do to be able to kind of just like nurture your relationship, you and your partner, like nurture your relationship in the midst of all that, so that even as you're parenting and, you know, your kids are getting an assistant mom and all that type of stuff, and those, that's another transition, and those adjustments are happening, but how do you nurture like the relationship connection itself, so that like in the midst of that your connection like doesn't get lost or overlooked or put on a back burner as you're having to navigate all this other stuff?
That's a lot actually, and it's still something that I'm learning, because I am a worker. So I'm one of those worker bees who has to do something all the time. I'm always organizing. I'm always doing something. I always have some sort of meeting. I always do this. You know, that's just, it's me and my patterns as a human. I'm one of those people who's a worker. And I really have to be very conscious and very aware. I think one of the biggest things that I've done throughout this entire, like, I feel like every year has a theme. And this year for me, my theme has been balance. Is trying to find that balance, because, you know, like life changed in March, everything went crazy and it became a whole new lifestyle. So I was just as, and it was funny because we had moved in together in June of last year. Okay. So like,
so you had like some
later,
time right, in between?
Well, we had time in between, but not a whole lot, because, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, all those shenanigans happened. And then right after that, it was like, oh yeah, here's a global pandemic. No big deal. So we definitely had to do, so we had just adjusted, like we had just gotten to where we needed to be, to where we could stay balanced and stay focused on both our relationship, because we were still like, we were very much concert goers. We do a lot of, like I said, we're cyclists. I'm a yoga instructor, but she prefers Pilates. So there are, you know, there are a lot of things, a lot of activities we do. We did concerts and shows, and we plan trips, we travel together. So those are the things that we made sure that we stayed, really strict on, because as long as we had our date nights, as long as we had, you know, if I had, you know, we had that
dates
focus
are so
on
important.
Us.
Like continuing to date throughout your relationship is so, so like imperative. Like when people, ask me, you know, because like my wife and I have been together almost 9 years, and so when people ask like, oh, you know, because in lesbian years, you know, it's like 20 so you know, because so for y'all like 3 years, that's like 7 you know, it's longer time frame, but folks are like, you know, what do you do to kind of maintain? And I'm like, y'all got to do those date nights, like dating, continuing to date each other, and do things where you get to know more about each other. Having new experience together goes a long way, because you get to continuously get to know this person. Of course, you grow over time. You don't stay the same. So, but it helps you to get to know those new things and what's changed, and, you know, how can you see this experience through this other person's eyes too. So the, yeah, like sticking to the dates and stuff like that, I know was important. So, I mean, it had to have been, I mean, sucky basically to some of those options not be able to do now because of COVID, like the concerts and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh. That actually, I actually did go into overhaul. I went into mom overhaul over the summer because, you know, school systems weren't sure what they were doing. And, you know, I'm like, I have to, I'm one of those planning people. So I was in my therapist's office in April crying, going, what are we doing for next year for these kids? I don't know what to do, you know. I was boohooing. So I was like super mom mode over the summer. And
yeah, I remember seeing birthday, some of your posts.
Child, listen, it was a struggle. But, you know, we got it done. And the boys are good. And I think this is the first time that she had seen me in like super, super mom mode, where I was like switching everything and planning everything and doing all this stuff. So I think it was, my birthday was in August last month. So, she took me camping, which we've gotten into. That's our, that's kind of our, we can't go to concerts. We can't go to shows.
Well, right. Yeah. I feel you. Cause concerts, that's one of our things too. Live, we love live music, and I miss concerts. I miss traveling. That's our thing. Like, traveling helped me fall in love with her, man. Like, traveling, being able to travel together.
Yes, yes. I had tickets to see Wicked in New York in April.
I'm so hurt.
Yes, it hurt. It was so painful.
I'm just like, dang. Yeah,
so. It was so painful. But she took me camping, and, you know.
Was it just you two, or did you?
Yeah, it was just us this time. We had the boys last month, and we have another camping trip coming up next month. No, we had the boys in June. And we have another camping trip coming up next month. But for my birthday, it was just us. And we had a lot of heart-to-hearts on that camping trip. And one of the things she said that struck me and kind of, like, pulled me back to reality is because we had been having problems about, like, you know, timing and when we're spending time with each other and, you know, getting all this stuff with the kids' schoolwork and your job and my job and da-da-da, you know, and we both work full-time and I'm doing work in the community. And she's just like, she said something that hit me, and it hit me really hard, was I just miss us having fun together. And I just was like, dang.
When I say I feel that. I feel that from experience right there.
Yeah, so I had to go back and kind of revisit my balancing stones and my balancing meditation, and I cut out time. Like, that was it. I didn't have a choice. I cut out time. Like, I was like, okay, every Sunday we're gonna spend time together, every Sunday, because the truth of the matter is, like, we are on the go all the time, and we are very different in a lot of ways. I'm very much a morning person. She's very much an evening person. Yeah. So yeah, I'm up at 5 a.m. You know, I done made up my half of the
day. She a morning person. I'm like, I'm a night. Well, it's shifting a little bit. It's funny because for the bulk of our relationship, she was the morning person, and she's not like a super morning person, but definitely like she would be like the one who wants to like rise and shine, like wake up and like get all, you know, into some adult activities. And me, I'm like late night. I'm like, let's get it popping late, you know. And so it should be sleep, you know. So it's just like we were, but it's kind of shifted some since we've been at home. I feel like there was a big chunk of time where it's like she was staying up really late because she works better in the evening, and I was getting up early because I have to work at a, you know, specific time. So I was like, this is kind of flip-flopped on us a little bit. But yeah, it definitely having to reconcile those differences. And I definitely think even something as simple as, okay, you all having the heart to heart and saying like, I miss us having fun together, that's something that is that can be related to from all kinds of relationships, but we don't get to see that, you know, in relationships that are not heteronormative. So we can see, you know, TV shows and see folks interact with each other, and they'd be like, oh, you know, I miss what we used to do, whatever. But to me, it would be nice to see like queer folks say that. It wouldn't be not, it, to just see that representation, because it does happen where we're like, hey, we need to, like, for me, I'm big on quality time. So I'm like, okay, I want us to have more quality time, not just kind of existing in the same space, but really engaging with each other and having that time and noticing when we've gotten away from that and getting back to it and, you know, having those hard check-ins with each other. Normal stuff, but we don't get to see that modeled by queer folks.
Not at all. Not at all. No. I definitely think that definitely had an effect on building my relationship, because on most ends, it was just very interesting because I did not have that image to put forth, you know, to be like, oh, we could be like, because we couldn't be like anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, the Huxtables, you've got, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you've got these, mm-hmm. these generic, especially Black successful families, like, you've got these generic looks, mm-hmm. but they all look the same. Like, mm-hmm.
It's already not that many of them. And then the ones we do see, it's like, you have kind of the typical nuclear family. And when they do stray from that a little bit, like, they might have, let's say, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You might have a cousin come into the mix, an aunt come into the mix. But ultimately, the nuclear romantic relationship and the parents and stuff like that, it's a straight couple. Mm-hmm. You know,
we did
so.
Have, one, I think there was, I can't remember the name of the show, but there's a show where it was about an interracial gay couple, and
the other thing too. When a lot of times when there is a representation, then it's like this person of color is partnered with a white person,
right?
Because even something like the L word was largely mm-hmm. white, and then we had one main character who was Kit too, but one, like, for real, the core cast, one main character who was a woman of color who also is very light skinned, so she can. You know, she's kind of a little more ambiguous or whatever, she can pass.
Right.
And then who had a white partner. And they were the ones who were going through the journey of having a child and all that kind of stuff. So even that, I didn't feel like that really represented me.
At all.
You know, this is upper middle class interracial couple that, you know, for all intents and purposes, might as well be a white couple. I really could not relate to that. And I watched the L Word and I, you know, enjoyed the show or whatever, but it didn't resonate with me in terms of like, oh, I feel like this is a model. It just was mm-hmm. much too white. And then when I did see a show that felt more familiar to me, it was like Noah's Ark. And so it's men. And they didn't have kids. I mean, they had long-term relationships and stuff like that. But as someone who wants to have kids and stuff like that, it was, you know, I definitely didn't see models of that, like just the core relationship itself. And then once you add in kids, you know, we just look at like,
that's a whole different world part. Cause that was definitely something that I desperately had to have guidance on. So that was, I mean, dating with kids is hard. Being mm-hmm. a lesbian dating with kids that's a whole different ballpark. Like it's a whole different ballpark. So it was definitely, it definitely took a lot of guidance. Like I said, I'm therapy, like, when I say we were in our therapy, like, we were either in couples therapy, my therapist, her therapist, kids got a therapist. This is not a game around here. We are some serious, like, I'm serious. I've always been very big on the guidance, because I don't feel like, you know, your family can guide you, but again, I'm a pastor's kid, so mm-hmm. I wasn't going to get a whole lot of guidance there. So
right.
I'm glad that I have it now.
So do you feel like you have basically kind of like become an example or a model for other folks? Like, do you find yourself in that role?
I definitely find myself in that role with my kids, without a doubt. They've already voiced it and they've already said it. So it's very interesting to be in that role now. I think I'm a good role model for, like, just trying to figure it out. I wouldn't want to be the role model for this is what they should look like, because mm-hmm. I mean, like, you see it and it's there, but it's very much just like, you know, a heteronormative family where, like, not everything's going to be the same. Like, we, you know, don't really have a whole lot of gender roles in our house, and it's really mm-hmm. interesting to not have that, because I was in a, you know, straight marriage for 10 years. So mm-hmm. it's really cool not to have that and be able to build that yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think if anything, I am a better role model for like, hey, let's, you may not know it, but take the path that you don't know. You know what I mean?
Like you can still figure it out.
Yeah. Just figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. I think, like for me, one of the reasons that I wanted to do the series and like even, for I briefly did like a YouTube vlog and I have like the couple's Instagram and stuff like that. And prior to doing this series, I started doing the BRQ couples therapy episodes and stuff like that, because I felt like it was important to at least put something out there, even though I'm like, we're absolutely not the end all be all and at all, like, you know, but we can still serve as an example for, you know, to start to see more of that representation that we haven't seen and that we didn't have, so that it doesn't seem so unfamiliar. When people think about like, oh, well, being poly or navigating, you know, having like a nesting partner and doing this or having mm-hmm. kids, whatever, at least they have something they can look to and be like, okay, well, this is not some abnormal thing. Like Jaleesa right. has a partner and has kids and has, you know, navigated this stuff. Or I know that like Javi is poly and she has a wife, mm-hmm. you know, so there's like more of that, those models that folks can look to and actually have us talk about our experiences and it just be real, you know, it's not dramatized. It's not, you know, a fictional account, but this is like our regular lives. And it may seem, especially to us in our day-to-day, very regular, very, you know, just plain or whatever. But for someone who has not seen those models and who, you know, is kind of trying to envision something different for themselves, but doesn't really know what, where to start, it can mean a lot because it can just give you a little bit of material to work with. Even if you end up doing right. something that's very different, it just gives you something, a starting point, a reference point, or like Jen and Mock said, a possibility model to be able to work with and start from somewhere the way that, you know, straight folks have had all their lives. I mean, so a lot of yeah. stuff they don't have to think about because they have, it's been modeled and they can choose to go against that, you know, and do it differently, but at least they have something, you know, even it's still beneficial to have something. Even if you go against it, you have a reference point to be like, okay, I don't want that, you know?
Right.
So
exactly.
I think both are important to have a reference point to show you something that may be what you want or something that may be like, okay, that ain't gonna work for me at all. Exactly. But at least you were able to, you know, build from somewhere. So I think that's really important. So yeah. So before I wrap up, I want to see if you have anything that you want to plug, promote, or just anything you want to share with listeners, anything you want them to remember, takeaways, anything like that?
Takeaways, go to therapy.
yes.
Bro, like when I say-
That's a great takeaway.
I really wish, and I do see it opening up definitely more in the younger generations and mm-hmm. the Black community. But my God, go to therapy, for God's sakes, go to mm-hmm. therapy.
It's a game changer. It's a game.
Bro, like life is hard.
It is. And to so many of us, like the thing is, so many Black folks, so many people of color, so many queer folks have so much internalized stuff to sift through and sort through just by our mere existence. Right. Because it's like, it comes with this, you know, adversity and things like that we go through is a byproduct of our existence. So like right. go to therapy and help to work through, because you may not even realize it. There's some stuff I'm like, okay, I know I deliberately want to work on. There's other things that have come up in therapy where I was like, like I didn't yeah. even realize that was an issue, you know? So yeah. I think yeah. it's so important, and that we all need our own, kind of like our own little team, our own support system, you know, to help us do what we need to do.
Yes. I completely agree. That's definitely, if there was a takeaway, it's go to therapy, know yourself, know your mental health, know what you need. I like calling mine my mental health toolbox. So, mm-hmm. you know, therapy just happens to be in my mental health toolbox, you know, mm-hmm. Meditate, yoga, I cycle, you know, take some time to, you know, I always tell people to do at least, one of my yoga sessions I end with, do 3 20-minute sessions of anything, just something you want to do. I mean, it's just 20 minutes of listening to an audiobook by yourself. Mm-hmm. Do something 3 times a day for 20 minutes just for you, and I mm-hmm. guarantee you there's a massive difference.
That's a great takeaway too. So even, I mean, I just not too long ago did like a wellness panel thing, and that would have been a good tip for that too, because people, we had like some different like takeaways and stuff of things for folks to keep in mind. But I think I'm a big fan of tangible, specific things. I'm a planner and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, this is something. So I like this idea of, this is something very specific you can do for 20 minutes, three times a day. Choose something that's just like, this is just for you for 20 minutes. And so then at least, you know, an hour, that adds up to it being an hour a day, or, you know, 7 hours a week where you had that time in that was just for you. So you can do something in the morning, afternoon, evening, however you want to split it up. But I love this idea of it being like this is very specific, you know, 3 20 minute things that are just for you. So y'all do that.
awesome, that's something
I think actually I'll incorporate in, because I do stuff for myself, but I like that it's just so specific. So I think I might actually
it gets a little deeper on the specifics of it. It's just one of those things that I end my yoga sessions with. I do a lot of like the first step in it is writing down first, write down some things, just small things, and then classify them into your love language. You know, if you like to exercise, you're, you know, then that's physical touch. You know, if you do something like journaling, that's words of affirmation. So those types of things,
that makes sense. I take
those, and then what you do is you pick off of that list 3 times a day, 20 minutes, do one of those things and trigger it towards what your love language is.
So the other takeaway is, check out Jaleesa's yoga class. Clearly, because there's more than yoga going on up in there. I think that's really awesome. I mean, I know that's something I can start incorporating like immediately, because it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm big on love languages, and there's something I utilize as part of my tool. I say toolbox too, actually. But they're one of my tools I use for a lot of different things. And so, yeah. I think that's another tangible way that I can implement them. So I will definitely do that and give credit.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for having me.
So do you have any, in terms of like your yoga and stuff like that, are you on social media or any handles?
Right now I am just under my own personal social media. I kind of like to keep it small. So I do offer occasional, I did a COVID thing where basically I did a personalized virtual therapy class for a virtual, you know, yoga therapy class for a single act of kindness. So basically all of my clients, that's how they would book their appointment, by sending me something that they did for someone randomly that week. And then that would do that. So I'm more so along the lines of passing it on, because I do love it. And I strongly believe that it helps with the mental health journey. Just my own personal, Jaleesa Longmire, Facebook, Art of Beauty 88 on Instagram.
All right. And if anything comes up, I'll just, you know, share with folks if there's, you know, if you do something like that again with the acts of kindness or just in general.
Absolutely.
I'll, you know, just let folks know. But yeah. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for supporting the show, listening to the show. But yeah, and I definitely think that your perspective and just your story can be, you know, beneficial to someone else and to give them another model of something to look to. Because I off the top of my head already know other people who have a similar story who, you know, may think they're the only ones. So. Right. You know, for them to be able to see, no, you're not. I think is very, just folks being able to feel understood. And that connection is so important, because we are, as much as our society likes to push this individualistic rhetoric, we are very interconnected and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's important. But thank you for being on. And to folks listening, thank you for tuning in. And yeah, until next time, that's all I got. I don't have a fancy outro. Y'all who listen, you already know the deal is. I just be like, all right, y'all, I'm out. Bye. So, but that's pretty much it. Bye, y'all.
Black Radical Queer is a Main Hustle Media podcast hosted by Javia Nicole. BRQ is produced and edited by Charmaine Fury, and the show's theme music was created by The Brothers Records. You can connect with us on Twitter or Instagram at Black Rad Queer. That's BLKRADQWR. You can also connect with us on Facebook through the Black Radical Queer Podcast Facebook fan page or the BRQ discussion group. You can get Black Rad Queer merch on teespring.com/BlackRadQueer, BLKRADQWR. And you can leave a voicemail, call in, ask a question, those types of things on the BRQ Google Voice line. And that number is 937-601-8647.
Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.